Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Look, I'm great because we've got a whole bunch of new Patreon subscribers. Julia Stafford, Kieran Costolino, fellow Bertha fellow, Antonio Juhas from the US, who we'll be hearing from a little later on, and also Eric with a K.
Damn. All right. We're hitting that Swedish market.
That's right. Yeah. They all signed up for as little as $3 a month to help us make the show. Our generous Patreon subscribers cover about 50% of the costs of making the show, and the rest of it, well, I don't want to brag, but I have been employed from time to time. So, you know, I chip in a little bit. You know what they used to say when we worked at the ABC together? They used to say it was a privilege to work at the ABC because they paid us so badly.
Yeah. They had to convince you somehow. It is a privilege
and
to
it's
work
a privilege
at the
to work at the ABC. And having a podcast is an absolute honour. Let's put it that way. This episode of Irrational Fear is supported in part by the Bertha Foundation, Fighting for a More Just World. I'm recording my end of this show on Gadigal land in the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, fair gum, and Section 45. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight on Irrational Fear, the federal government is set to cut loans to university students who fail their subjects, leaving many political science students wondering how they can be expected to get jobs in politics if they don't get experience first in failing while being taxpayer funded. And the Victorian Racing Club wants a crowd of up to 50,000 people for Melbourne Cup Day, with plans to rebrand the iconic event as the race that restarts the pandemic. And Joe Biden has picked his running mate, Kamala Harris, who is now just a heartbeat, an election, a Russian disinformation campaign, a plague, a depression, and a civil war away from the presidency. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Yes, this is Irrational Fear. I'm former Channel 10 weatherman Dan Illich, and joining us on the panel this week to discuss all the news we should be scared of is former ABC Melbourne breakfast host and champion of the 2010 direct-to-video classic Batman Under the Red Hood, it's Sammy Shah. Hey, Sammy, you wrote 10 years ago on Twitter today that Batman
Thank
Under
you so
the...
much for having me. I will get back to the Joker.
You wrote on Twitter 10 years ago today that it was bloody awesome. Do you still stand by that?
You know what? Of all the different DC animated films, I will still maintain Batman Under the Red Hood is in the top three. It definitely is. It still lives up to the high standard that they set. And yeah, absolutely. The Joker has it coming, and my boy is going to give it to him.
And she's a lawyer by day, comedian by night, returning panelist, and half woman, half dolphin. It's Beck Melrose. Beck, what's the ocean like right now?
It's just good to be anywhere other than my house.
And from next week, he's taking 2 weeks off the podcast to drive around the country, destroying 5G phone towers as he goes. It's Lewis Hobber.
Hello, Dan. Yeah, that's right. I'm hoping to be Australia's greatest vector.
We'll talk about this later on, but I went on a road trip a couple of weeks ago and I felt
very nervous that I could be a vector around New South Wales.
Well, the worst thing about it is the place I'm actually going is I'm going to Byron Bay for 2 weeks, which is essentially the home of people who don't wash their hands. Like, I will get it.
And none of those people are going to get vaccinated. They're immune vulnerable.
No, they'll see me in a mask, they'll beat me up, they'll burn down the nearest 5G tower. It's going to be a really relaxing holiday.
You're not going to get coronavirus, Lewis, because you'll be too busy getting smallpox.
Yeah, I'm going to go old school. Just crack out the bubonic plague.
Yeah,
collect them all. I like that, Beck. Big podcast this week. We've got two special guests coming up a little later on. We're going to be talking with Paddy Manning from the Saturday Paper about the major threat facing the Adani Carmichael mine, and also chatting with US-based journalist Antonio Yuhas, who tells us what Kamala Harris means for climate action in the United States. But first, here is this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Peter Dutton. Many of you have reached out to say that Australian Border Force is responsible for the disembarkment of contagious COVID-19 passengers from the Ruby Princess. Well, two things. One, thanks for reaching out. We now know where you live and we will be in touch sooner or later, or when you least expect it. And two, it's not true. Australian Border Force has a proud half-decade history of stopping boat people from destroying Australia. And technically, the Ruby Princess was a ship. Those people were ship people, and that's not our bag. Locking up boat people, Australian Border Force. Locking up ship people, it's legally ambiguous, but I'd suggest probably the fault of a pro-union, pro-labour port authority. Australian Border Force. We stop the boats, not ships. Spoken and authorised by Peter Dutton. I know where you live, Canberra.
So it's good to have Peter Dutton's money on the show. First fear tonight, Russian state media is claiming that Russia has the COVID-19 vaccine. It would make sense that Russia would come out first, because after all, the Tokyo Olympics have been cancelled and there are a lot of Russian pharmaceutical experts who've got a lot of time on their hands. Russian journalists are declaring this a Sputnik moment. What does this Sputnik moment mean, Sammy Shah?
It's really remarkable that they've called it the Sputnik moment, because they've called the vaccine Sputnik 5, right? And the idea being, according to Putin, they are paying homage to the fact that they were the first into space with Sputnik 5.
Yeah.
Except one tiny detail that they have not really mentioned, and the history books kind of tend to forget, is Sputnik 5 didn't actually have any humans on it. Yuri Gagarin wasn't in space until Vostok 1, which was 8 months later. Sputnik 5, however, carried 2 dogs, 40 mice, 2 rats, and a bunch of plants. And I'm assuming those are the things that died in the creation of this so-called vaccine. What's even amazing is normally Russian medicine waits until someone comes out with a vaccine before coming up with their bootleg version. But in this case, we got the bootleg first. And so it's a really exciting change in the pharmaceutical game.
It's like Russian roulette, isn't it? I would say they called it Sputnik because once you inject it, all you hear is beeping and seeing stars. That's all you've got.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon it's nice to see toxic masculinity channeled for the greater good for a change, though. Right. Got some positive coming out of it.
They have been so good at poisoning lately, and it's just good to see them still at the top of their game.
Yeah, it's interesting that they field tested this first on Russian dissidents in UK, and the ones that survived that experience are the ones who now, you know, don't get coronavirus. But I'm going to pay homage to Dan's pun earlier and just point out that the leader, you know, Vladimir Putin, even though he even vaccinated his daughter, Putin, her life at stake. Thank you very much.
Well done.
I live in Melbourne. There's not much else to do.
Well, thank you.
It's worth a shot.
Sammy, you are welcome on this podcast again.
I mean, if we're going that low, we could say they're rushing it through.
They are rushing it through. This is absolutely right. You did mention that he did try it out on his daughter first. It's kind of unusual because apparently not many people know about Vladimir Putin's daughters, and he doesn't even acknowledge them, and no one in the state apparatus acknowledges them. This is like one of the very first times that he's ever acknowledged the existence of his daughters. It's incredible.
given that the last time any Russian leader acknowledged their child was when Stalin basically had let his son be killed in a German concentration camp, I think it's all right if we just ignore their parental techniques, basically.
All we need to do is start convincing Trump to test things on his children and we'll be A-OK.
You're listening to Irrational Fear.
My daughter, Ivanka, she's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body.
If Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
Next fear, during this pandemic, the media have been rather quick to blame and shame all sorts of people for COVID-19 rather than Peter Dutton and Australian Border Force for the arrival of the disease on our shores. What's the point of building like a powerful, centralised mega ministry if you can't even stop one tiny little germ? They had a head start, for one. We're girt by sea. And two, we've spent the last 20 years building offshore processing centres for this exact thing. But of course, not all blame is equal. On July 30, the Courier Mail doxed two teenagers from Melbourne who travelled through the southeast Queensland. Unknowingly, they had COVID-19. Meanwhile, a Rockhampton doctor, a wealthy Aspen skier, a mercenary from Afghanistan completely escaped the same doxing treatment from the News Corp press. Beck Melrose, who is to blame here?
Oh, I think we all are a little bit, aren't we? I mean, it feels good to finally be in control of something, and there's just a lot of scolding going on. Everyone's loving a good scold at the moment, but there's all this research out at the moment that's talking about how this kind of public shaming backfires when it comes to compliance with public health messaging. I think it's true, and privilege is playing a part in it too. I keep going out with my mates and they're like, oh, there are so many people out and about. It's like, we're out and about too. What makes a different rule for us, you know? But yeah, there's research out that's saying that non-white and other disadvantaged groups are experiencing the stigma more severely than privileged groups, and that's for sure happening. Why didn't we out the Aspen skiers? How come they got away with it and others haven't?
It is so bizarre. Like, normally people who go skiing in Aspen, you find out all about it on Instagram. But no, we didn't hear one skerrick about it from this group that came back with the disease.
Exactly. And, I mean, everyone's kind of participating in it. We have a right to be angry, I guess, you know. Like, it's a very anxious time. And we've got good basis. Public executions used to be our preferred form of entertainment. So this public shaming has just kind of been taken online and we're going mad with it. There's nothing else to do but like masturbate, watch TV and shame people on social media. So we're just ripping right in.
It's 2020. That is a great lineup for 2020, Big Melrose. Fantastic.
It just seems like since no one's able to actually like touch any hands, we're just pointing our fingers instead.
Yeah, exactly. It's social distance shaming. The thing that's getting me as well is when they're releasing these like footprints of all the venues that people have been to as well, I would be so embarrassed. Like, you'd look at mine and she'd be like, why is she going to open mics in a pandemic? Like, stay home. A library's never listed. Like, it's all the loose units who are getting it. Like, there's never Leichhardt Community Centre that's been closed for a deep clean.
Dan Illich went to KFC and Krispy Kremes on the same day?
In one day?
Lewis, do you think naming and shaming works, or do you think it makes at least some people feel good?
I mean, it definitely makes people at the Courier Mail feel a little better, I would say. But, yeah, it is the absolute huge gap between the people that they're naming and shaming is so obvious. And it's so frustrating because those two people who did get doxxed, their behaviour wasn't likeable. It was difficult to defend. But it is one of those things where you're like, it's a difference between defending their behaviour and defending the outing of them, which was so unconscionable and so obviously racist. You just, as you say, the Aspen skiers, so many different kinds of people who have broken quarantine and not a single one of them has made the front page.
Sammy, you're at the end of our second week of hard lockdown in Melbourne. If you could burn off some energy, blow off some steam right now and put someone on the front page of the Courier Mail, who would it be?
Well, see, because it is the Courier Mail, that's a trick question, right? I can't put a white person on the front page of the Courier Mail because no one will believe it. They'll just think that the gamma settings on the Photoshop system were wrong and these are actually meant to be two black people, because the Courier Mail has never put a face on the front in a negative way. If it was a white person, it's always going to be a black or a brown person. So it's been really remarkable to kind of see this embrace of racism here in Australia, because you've never seen something like it before. I really had no idea that Australia had any racism at all as a country. Australians were racist people. So it's really a shock to me, to my system. I feel betrayed. I feel surprised, let down. I don't know what to believe in anymore. Next thing you know, Russia's going to go on vaccines or something. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I'm just hurt. I'm just hurt. That's all I can say.
Sammy, are you nervous when lockdown is over and you have to go and meet your fellow racist Australians outside?
I reckon the only way we would see like two brown people on the front cover of the Courier Mail with any kind of like positive headline would be if it was two white guys in blackface.
Hey Hey is back.
And they'd be like, look at these legends. Bloody larrikins. The Aussie spirit's still alive. A
rational fear. Post-mortem results are not expected.
Your fear is rational.
Next fear. This week, the US presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden picked the very obvious choice of Kamala Harris as his running mate for the 2020 election. Fearmongers, we are 82 days away from either more of the same or perhaps someone who could make America normal again. What are your thoughts on Kamala Harris?
Dan, firstly, I want to commend you on your pronunciation of the name Kamala, because most of America has been torn apart by how to pronounce her name. They've been Kamalas, they've been Kamalas, they've been all kinds of things. So in 2016, she actually released a video showing people how to pronounce her name using children.
Yeah. It's not Kamala. It's not Kamala. It's not Kamala. It's Kamala. Kamala Harris.
I'm glad you watched it. So I just want to, hats off to you, Dan.
Sammy, I can pronounce it well because I've spent a lot of time in America working as a producer and a journalist. And one of my American contacts actually gave me Kamala's number, and we can give her a call to congratulate her. Let me just line that up right now. Let's give Kamala a call. They said, is this Kamala's number? They said, yes, this is Kamala's number.
Remarkable.
Let's have a look.
Hello.
Hello, is this Kamala Harris?
She's in the kitchen right now. Do you need to speak to her?
Hang on. No, we do. Yeah, we do want to talk to Kamala.
Oh, I don't know whether she is free to talk right now.
Is this Kamala or is this Kamal?
Depends.
Oh, hang on a second. Well, I've got the wrong number.
There we go. There are those dulcet tones.
Look, I'm so sorry. I can't believe my friend gave me the wrong number to Kamala Harris. Kamal.
Yes.
I understand you are a mega US politics fan.
Not really. I became an Obama tragic after meeting him personally in 2011. But before that, I don't know. In fact, I had read his book, The Audacity of Hope, in 2007. And that changed, you know, I had never been interested in politics at all till I came across the book on my way to Malaysia in the latter part of 2007.
Since we thought we were talking to Kamala Harris, can we talk to you as if you might be Kamala? How are you feeling about getting the nomination? Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I never, ever, ever dreamed that I would be selected by Joe, even though actually I dated his son for a little while.
And Kamala, tell us, what are your plans for this election?
If dreams could come true, I would like to erase racism and prejudice and let humanity, kindness, you know, that I think there's someone in your country, in Australia, has asked the question, why are so many people so unkind? And I ask myself that very same question. I mean, how do we substitute unkindness with kindness? Maybe it comes with knowledge.
Well, Kamala, I think that's very sage words. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
That's the least I could do, and I will give your best wishes to Joe Biden, that is.
All right, excellent. And when you become vice president, can we come and visit you at the White House?
I hope by that time you decide to come, I might be president.
Well, anything is possible. Can we talk to Kamal just for 1 second?
Of course. Well, who do you want to talk to now?
Kamal, I want to talk to you. Tell how do you are a US politics nut. What is your what's the one thing you find interesting about Kamala Harris?
You know, the, maybe I suppose the fact that she's part Indian. There is a you know umbilical connection to that. I don't know why I react that way. But maybe the fact that I have five of the letters of my name connected to hers, who knows? But basically, the way Kamala disposed of William Barr during the cross-examination and the way she... Yeah, I mean, that was just brilliant. You know, the Attorney General of the United States couldn't respond coherently to Kamala. I mean, to me... that should be enshrined and should be repeated.
Maybe that is going to be your next video. You are going to be reenacting Kamala Harris ripping William Barr a new one.
So will you play Barr then?
yes, I'll play Barr.
You know. Interestingly enough, did you know Barr's father had connections with Jeffrey Epstein?
I had no idea, and I guess Epstein's dead, and I guess that's not defamatory. I guess that's not defamatory.
Seriously, William Barr's father employed Jeffrey Epstein because if Jeffrey Epstein was a phenomenal teacher, I think he taught maths and science, and he was brilliant. He was like the Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams. That he had a way to hypnotize kids, but that was fine. Except that his other traits spoiled everything.
Yeah, all right.
And after William Barr's father had employed Jeffrey Epstein, within 6 months they were both expelled from the school.
If you want to find out more about Kamal's own interests in US politics, all you got to do is follow him on Twitter. He's very engaged. Kamal, thank you so much for joining us on Irrational Fear.
The pleasure was entirely mine, and please be kind.
Thank you, Kamal. Oh, I can't believe I got that number mixed up. Oh,
that's
can you believe that?
I can't believe I saw him at the 2005 Big Day Out.
Did you really?
Realizing the Vice President of the United States.
He just ruined Dead Poets Society forever for me. I call it, oh, Captain, my Captain. Oh, no, come on my island.
Man, that was so wild. I really didn't see the Epstein stuff coming at the end. I did not. I loved Kamal. Yeah, I just didn't see the, like, pedophile island chat coming from Kamal.
Yeah.
I mean, he is best friends with Rupert Murdoch. So, you know, him becoming vice president wouldn't be the only way Rupert Murdoch gives a Democratic nominee any good coverage. So, yeah,
who knows? To chat through what this VP pick means for the future of climate action in the USA, I spoke with fellow Bertha Fellow and energy analyst and investigative journalist Antonia Juhas earlier yesterday. Antonia, welcome to Irrational Fear.
Thank you for having me. Great to be with you.
What is Kamala Harris's track record like on climate action?
Well, she's only been in the United States Senate for a few years, so we need to look back at her record as California Attorney General, where it's not as easy to parse out someone's climate record when they're Attorney General. So
right, yeah.
What she did do was introduce an environmental justice office in through her work. And environmental justice has been a key thread throughout her career. And the fossil fuel industry has not. So in her entire political career, she's only taken $170,000 in total from an entirely broad category that's called energy and natural resources, which is basically nothing.
Right.
So that's a sign that she is not tied to this industry. And certainly her policy proposals, the legislation that she's put forward and the policies that she ran on when she was running for president are very aggressive climate and anti-fossil fuel policies.
I like that $170,000 is nothing in America. That's great. That would be a scandal in Australia.
That's funny. That's nothing.
How are you feeling about this VP pick as someone who covers the energy sector and the climate action sector?
I think it's a great pick. I think that she pushes Biden to be more aggressive on climate and fossil fuels. Her positions are definitely more aggressive than his. She supports a Green New Deal. She's put forward serious environmental justice and climate justice legislation in the Senate. And she's made pledges to ban fracking, to end subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, to end federal government support for the fossil fuel industry, to halt new leasing on federal lands or waters for oil and gas operations, to oppose new oil and gas infrastructure. I mean, it's across the board. And then her legislation, I think, with a focus on environmental justice, is particularly key because it gets to the legislation addresses how do you address the systemic harm of environmental injustice that has been leveled against communities of color in the United States, and how do you redress that through policy? And it's not just about stopping the use of fossil fuels. It's while that those operations still exist, and of course they will continue to for some time, how do you address the inequities of those policies and try and address the harms to public health, to the environment, public safety, et cetera?
I mean, for weeks, one of the main talking points for commentators and bloggers and anyone who wants to have an opinion is that Kamala Harris is not progressive enough, and progressives in the Democratic Party just won't be placated with Kamala. But it seems today, the day that it's been announced, that progressives are just ready to get on with the show. Is Kamala enough?
I think that she is what was needed for this moment in time and for this ticket. Biden is a deeply problematic candidate, has deeply problematic positions. As anyone who spent as much time as I have, opposing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, Biden was a deeply upsetting development choice, to be the candidate. And Harris is still a moderate. She's mostly a moderate on most issues, and that is true. But the places where she is not moderate really count on the issues that I care about in particular, and that is, on the climate and on fossil fuels. And I'm, I think that this is a historic and important and exciting candidacy, and it is something that people are going to get excited about, and I think progressives are going to get excited about it too.
Well, Antonia, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge on Irrational Fear. Irrational Fear!
This is Irrational Fear.
From the cut and thrust of climate action in America to the pull and fart of climate denialism in Australia, the economic case for coal could sink one of the most contentious coal projects in the world, the Adani Carmichael Mine, also known as the Adani Pit of Global Heat Death. Paddy Manning from the Saturday Paper has written a brilliant piece on why it might fall over. Paddy, thank you so much for joining us on Irrational Fear.
Thanks, Dan. There's no pits of heat death, though, in the story. I don't know much about those.
Well, I've got some questions for you about your story. First question, Paddy, who is your favourite contestant on this season of The Bachelor so far?
I haven't watched a minute of it.
Perfect. Now, for those who aren't aware of the Adani Carmichael Mine, what threat does it pose to the Earth as a whole?
The Adani Mine is basically a threat because the infrastructure, in particular the rail, needed to get that coal to the coast because it's about 400 k's inland. Once that's built, it'll make a whole basin, a whole new thermal coal basin in Queensland kind of economic. So it's not so much this one mine, although the scale of this mine as it was originally proposed at 60 million tonnes per annum is enormous. It's the other mines behind it, which are also proposed by Clive Palmer, by Gina Rinehart, you know, the lot. So,
is it possible, however, though, Paddy, that the sheer destruction this would wreak in Queensland is entirely what Queenslanders deserve, because largely they're full of shit and horrifically terrible people?
Possible.
Sammy's just trying to get himself on the front page of the Courier Mail this week.
look, Queensland's, it's an interesting proposition because Queensland's actually, the future of its coal fields is much more secure than the future of the coal fields in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, or certainly the brown coal that's mined for energy in Victoria. So basically because Queensland has got the highest proportion of coking coal, which is used for steel making, and is, you know, much more valuable. It's got a higher calorific value, and it's so the mine life for the Queensland coking coal mines is, you know, that they can reasonably expect to be mining that for, you know, decades. Thermal coal, which accounts for 90% of the tons in the world that's shipped by sea, thermal coal is much more threatened immediately because, you know, it's facing competition from renewables, and it's under pressure from investors for the obvious reasons, you know, due to climate change.
Yeah,
nothing to do with whether Queensland is a nice pebble or not. they just happen to be sitting on this incredibly excellent coking coal resource.
Paddy, I was reading your piece, and that's really interesting. I had a couple of questions about it. But when you say that the economic side is divorced now, why would Adani push forward with it?
Well, he's partly because he's already bought, the Abbott Point coal terminal for $2 billion in 2010. So he's got this integrated strategy, which is described as pit, as in the mine pit, all the way through the rail, through the shipping, to the power station back in India, and then to the plug-in homes in India or Bangladesh. And so it's called Pit to Plug. And he bought the port a decade ago, and he bought the tenement, as in the ground, you know, off Link Energy a decade ago. Now, the thing, what's happened is that the world has completely changed in those 10 years. He's looking at a sunk, you know, he's made money off the coal terminal in the meantime, but he's kind of at this juncture where, and this is what I sort of focused on in the story, has he spent so much, he's right at that tipping point, has he spent so much on this mine that he can't afford to pull out? Or would it be better if he could just find another mine that didn't require him to build 400 kilometres of rail, which BHP, as it happens, wants to sell the biggest coal mine in the country down in the Hunter Valley, which is Mount Arthur? And that's what I think is an interesting development in the last month.
And why is BHP selling that mine?
Well, BHP has already spun off most of its thermal coal assets 5 years ago into a company called South 32. And BHP, like most investors, is coming under pressure to get its emissions down. So a lot of big businesses have, talk about net zero emissions by 2050. And BHP is under pressure from its own shareholders, including one of its largest, which is the Norwegian, you know, sovereign wealth fund,
yeah,
to get rid of thermal coal. The other thing is thermal coal has tanked as a commodity. Prices halved in the course of the last couple of years. So, now that's cyclical, and a lot of, you know, you would have seen Glencore in the last, you know, recent weeks has cut its production, and that's going to cause job losses in New South Wales as well. You know, the coal sector, like the oil and gas industry, has been hit by the pandemic. So it's a good time to sell.
One of the most interesting things in this piece that you wrote was just really floored me. Back in May, Mr. Adani wrote on LinkedIn that COVID-19 was an opportunity to pause, rethink, and design a new, faster transition to low-carbon future. And he ends his piece by saying, although the impact of climate change is slower to emerge than the pandemic, it's a threat to humanity. Its threat to humanity is more significant. Therefore, the case of transition to a cleaner energy future must be taken up not only by government but also by industry. India is quietly and firmly leading the way. COVID-19 may be the turning point where society leverages the economic rebuilding effort to fast-track the transition to a cleaner future. That doesn't sound like a coal-thirsty member of the coalition. Like if Keith Pitt, Matt Canavan were at a pub and Mr. Adani walked in and said that to them, they would tell Mr. Adani to fuck off out of and never come back into that pub again. For me, it's like his interests and his values are clearly at odds with this coal mine. How long do you think it will be before he completely capitulates and gets rid of it?
Sorry, just to interrupt, Dan, when did he write that?
In May.
Because in 1998, I remember there was a story out of India, that he had been kidnapped at gunpoint and held at gunpoint for a while until he was released on ransom. So I thought maybe this was something that he'd written at gunpoint, you know, as a signal to people that I'm still alive, but things are not good right now.
He was tied up in the basement of Greta Thunberg's house, and Greta Thunberg had a
pistol. Someone should check him for him again.
The truth is he's aiming to make Adani the biggest renewable energy player in the world by 2030. You know, he has a huge investment in renewables, and his wealth is very much, you know, he's got half a dozen listed companies in India. He's the second, or it depends which, you know, wealth chart you look at, the rich list, but he's certainly one of the most, you know, if not the second, I had thought he was the second, you know, the fact checker said it was the fifth. It seems to change year by year, of course, but.
I'm actually the second, Paddy. I'm actually the second richest person in
all on Patreon, all based on Patreon.
Yeah, thanks to Patreon. Yeah. That's how I can afford to make a podcast.
Something like $16 billion, and a lot of that is to do with his investment in clean energy and transmission in India.
It's interesting in your piece, like just the stat in your piece was fascinating. He's worth $16 billion. 5 years ago, he started the renewable business. That business is now worth $8 billion. Yet over the last 10 years, he's sunk $1 billion into the Carmichael mine.
Yeah. So, you know, analysts used to say in the coal space that the Galilee Basin's not economic when the coal price is below $100 a ton.
Yeah.
So because you've got to fund the rail and the whole thing, it's a greenfields project. So the coal price now is about $50 a ton. But because Adani's made so much money, including on green energy, he can afford to bankroll this project. Also because he's not paying tax, you know, he's routing a lot of his, you know, Australian earnings through the, you know, Cayman Islands and other tax havens. So, but Adani's not a greenie. You know, he's got a terrible environmental track record in India.
Right.
He's a billionaire, and he's like this with Narendra Modi, and Narendra Modi's prime ministership has been a boon for him. So Narendra Modi came in partly on a platform of getting rid of crony capitalism. The way it was described to me is he's done that. He's just reduced the number of cronies. And of course, the remaining cronies are more powerful than ever. And Gautam Adani is one of those.
Maybe he's doing it out of spite because he saw that picture of Prime Minister Scott Morrison trying to make a curry at home. And it was so offensive to anyone of an Indian background. He's like, fuck this. I'm going to fucking destroy Australia
now
for that bullshit. Yeah. And Queensland has to go anyway, so it's fine.
The Stop Adani campaign used to describe him as the perfect villain, and I think that there is probably an element of pride in the fact that he's become a villain, and he's probably got a degree of obstinacy about this project now. What was in my story was that the fact that Bloomberg had reported only a couple of weeks previously that, surprise, surprise, Adani had bid for this Mount Arthur mine.
Mm.
Now, you put two and two together because Adani's Australian chief executive recently quit unexpectedly, Lucas Dow, and he's been the one that's been the culture warrior, taking it on the chin, fighting the greenies. Then he quits, he disappears. And who do they replace him with? The guy who used to run Mount Arthur at BHP.
Mm.
So there's kind of people in the market going, hang on, what is going on here?
Mm.
And I quote Tim Buckley, the analyst, who is an opponent of the Adani mine, admittedly, but he is an experienced financial analyst in Australia in the merchant banking community, and he knows what he's talking about. And he's saying there is a possible win-win here because BHP wants to get out of thermal coal. The workers at Mount Arthur want to continue. It's better quality coal than what's in the Galilee Basin. It's cheaper to mine, and it would suit Adani. So what the question raised is, what is Adani's real commitment to the Galilee Basin and to Queensland? And I think you'll probably find, you know, look, I'm hesitant to make a prediction, but there is this enticing win-win scenario that's kind of emerging.
But the timing has to be pretty soon, though, right? They're just starting to build that railway. As soon as they make that railway, that unlocks the basin. So he might as well move I mean, in a climate perspective, he needs to move quick so the Galilee Basin doesn't get unleashed.
Maybe if they hire the same people to build that railway that built the Sydney Light Rail, we might have an extra 10 years or so.
That'll buy us some time, won't it? Far out. Well, that's I didn't realise how much I had in common with Adani. I was like, no, seriously, a lot of sunk costs going ahead with something that's not economically viable that nobody wants. That sounds like my festival show.
That's about it for Irrational Fear tonight. Stick around after the credits for a bonus interview with an Australian QAnon supporter. I'm as surprised as you are. Yep, they'll talk to anyone. A big thank you to our fearmongers tonight, Sammy, Beck, Lewis, Patty, and yes, Kamal, who really fucked up the joke, but who cares? what have we got to plug? Patty, you've got your book, How Climate Change is Killing Us. Body Count.
Body Count. Out now.
There it is. Great. Sammy, have you got anything to plug?
Please free Melbourne from the grip of stage four. Stay at home, keep your mask on. I have nothing to plug because I have nowhere to go. So, yeah.
Beck Melrose, are you selling anything?
Absolutely not at the moment. I'm just waiting this one out. Be kind to each other. I'll take out away from Kamal.
Oh, very good. And Lewis, you got anything to plug?
Just my road trip to Byron Bay. If you know anyone there who doesn't wash their hands, tell them to keep it clean for the next fortnight.
Big thank you to everyone who helped out on this week's show, including Yanni Agisolo, Tony Uhas, Jacob Round, who is on the Teppanyaki timeline. Next week, Lewis is away and for the next couple of weeks, but the podcast will go on. We will have next week Jamila Rizvi, Rosie Waterland, and fellow Bertha fellow Lindo on the podcast. Until then, there's always something to be scared of. Goodbye. Right now on Irrational Fear, we are joined by a believer in the QAnon conspiracy theories who wishes to stay anonymous. Welcome.
Thank you.
So why are you anonymous?
Otherwise people will be able to find out who I am.
And why is that a bad thing?
You've got to be careful, Dan. The internet's full of crazy people.
Right. So what is QAnon?
We're here to bring about the awakening, to reveal the truth hidden from the majority, because most people are people. It's sheeple.
And you and your QAnon supporters aren't sheeple.
No. Hence our motto. Where we go one, we go all.
If sheep could talk, I think that's exactly what they would say. Where we go one, we go all.
What makes you such an authority in sheep?
I grew up on a farm.
Mainstream media.
If you don't trust mainstream media, who do you trust?
We trust Q.
And who is Q?
He's an insider who had Q-level government security clearance, and for the past few years, he's left breadcrumbs of secret knowledge on internet forums. In the Q army, connect the dots.
Right, and what's Q's name?
Why would I know Q's name?
So you could verify if they're a reputable source.
Q is a reputable source because I don't know their name.
I don't follow.
What Q knows is dangerous, and because of that, no one can ever know their name or even the smallest shred of verifiable evidence about them.
And that's why you trust them.
Yes. Anyone comfortable using their own name can't be trusted.
And what's your name?
See what you're trying to do there, mate. It's not going to work. Like my mum used to say, you didn't come down in the last raid shower, Simon Maskell.
And what do you say to people who say that QAnon is a cult?
Cult? We're not gullible fools in white robes waiting for divine deliverance. And if you don't believe us now, Dan, once hashtag the Great Awakening occurs and God helps Donald Trump expose the satanic paedophiles, Revelation 13:18. You will then.
Well, that sounds crazy.
Okay. Well, if that's not the truth, you tell me. What is the truth?
Well, in a secular transactional world stripped of connection and meaning where the powerful lie with impunity whilst the weak are trampled under the jackboot of progress, sometimes people just want to feel part of something.
Now, that sounds crazy.
Simon Maskell?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.